myself.
And she has?
Oh, I've been here for a long time.
Hours. You're late.
I'm shocked. I was with Cameron.
We're in meetings on topics.
Good morning.
Topics.
How are you?
My cupcakes are...
Okay, as soon as I get my coach here and my administrator.
It's the rain, maybe. I'm not sure.
I simply overslept.
Or that. So I kept hitting snooze. No good reason. I mean, I needed to get up, but I just kept hitting it. I was in with my daughter. She's about 2 in the morning. Daddy! On the baby monitor. She's 3.
Daddy!
So I felt.
House Committee on General Government Consumer Protection, Thursday, April 14, 2011, at 8:08. Jen, we're going to open with work session on House Bill 3241.
Aye. Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3241, we're looking at a -3 amendment that replaces the original measure and allows a person to reserve with the city or county all or part of the public real property within 400 feet of the property on which a funeral service is going to be conducted. And it directs the cities and counties to enter into arrangements with funeral service practitioners that allow those practitioners to take reservations and collect a fee.
Thank you for that.
And it allows the person making a reservation to exclude from the area any person who is not invited. Makes it a Class B misdemeanor to refuse to leave a reserved area when requested. Makes it a Class A misdemeanor to disrupt a funeral service within 1,000 feet.
Thank you, Jen. Committee members, you have a -3 in front of you. Representative Sheehan, do you want to discuss the -3?
I don't have a -3 in front of me.
And then the last one I saw, I think, was a -2.
Oh.
Will, this was... Representative Smith and Representative Garrett were working together to create a different solution to our Funeral Civility Act. I'm pleased with how this looks. I don't think it's going to be any sort of silver bullet as far as avoiding a constitutional challenge. I think we'll still get one, but I think it maintains the policy objective, and I'm thrilled to be working together with those two legislators, and I'm excited to see this thing pass.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Maher, you wanted to make some comments briefly?
Chair Wisnett, members of the committee, Andrea Maher, Legislative Director of the ACLU of Oregon. Here today, unfortunately, but necessarily in opposition to the -3 amendments, I did provide to the council and council committee, the committee and council as well, a memo authored at our request by Greg Chamoff and Alan Galloway of the law firm Davis Wright Tremaine yesterday. It's a 16-page analysis, so I'm not going to go over it today, I promise. I just want to make a few comments about why some of the things I think we all share regarding the Phelps and why we urge you not to go forward. I think we do all agree we do not want the Phelps returning to Oregon. We find, like you do, their speech abhorrent. But we do believe this proposal is unconstitutional, both under the Oregon and federal constitutions. And there's two things we know about the Phelps. They crave and seek out media attention, and they go to places where they can challenge these laws and they win. I urge you to look at pages 13 to 14 of our memo. You will see footnotes 33 through 39. Disturbingly, these cases are all Phelps v. And in 2009, 2010, 2011. They are winning in courts. I can tell you from personal experience recently, the ACLU of Oregon challenged an Oregon law. We went from the trial court in the U.S. District Court to the Ninth Circuit. We won. We are settling the attorney's fees for over $200,000. That is not what we were entitled to. We are settling it. I am sure that if the faults prevail, which unfortunately we think they will be able to collect more than a quarter million attorney fees. They will not be interested in settling those attorney fees. And they will have unfortunately garnered attention, a platform here, and our money. And so we feel an obligation from this organization to urge you not to move forward with this. And I appreciate the opportunity of the chair to give me a moment to speak on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for presenting your position. Committee members, we have the dash three before us. Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the dash three amendments dated April 6, 2011 to House Bill 3241.
Co-Chair Holby moves the dash three amendments dated April 6, 2011 into House Bill 3241. Is there discussion?
Does anybody want to hear anything about it?
We talked about it.
Great.
You want to speak to him?
No need to.
Is there any opposition to moving it? Do we want to do a roll call, Chair Holby?
You can just adopt.
Okay. Any opposition to the dash threes?
Right.
If not, the dash threes are moved into House Bill 3241. We do not have the financial impact statement because we just received the amendment, so we'll close the work session on House Bill 3241. Representative Cowan is not here. Would you, Mrs. Sullivan, would you call Representative Cowan?
Are we going to move the SLA though? Sorry, are we just going to accept the amendment, or are we going to? We don't have the financial impact. We just got the amendments. They have to be, everything has to be. Can we just go back to the Mr. Chair?
If I could, there's a, maybe you could explain, there's a young man in the audience that testified here, Ryan Ripp, and he was given an award from our Department of Veterans Affairs. I know he is here today to see a monumental vote on this issue. Could you explain to him what this means? He's with his mother, Amy, there. And
Thank you very much, Representative Matthews. Yeah, what we just received the amendment, so we have to send that over to get a financial impact analysis of it. We hope it'll be minimum. We hope we'll be able to pass that out of the this committee, but we couldn't do that today, and that's the process we have to go by to be sure that we're looking after your money so we know what the financial impact of any legislation we're passing, so we're not able to do that. Thank you for coming to your Capitol Day, and hope we'll be having it back on the schedule next Tuesday or Thursday.
Mr. Chair, if I may add to that, for Ryan's benefit, the financial impact is on the state budget. We don't ever look at the financial impact on your personal budget or your business's budget. So just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you, Ms. Thank you, Representative Cameron. Okay, I'm going to start the talk. Thank you. Okay, with that, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2020. Again, remind us, we've heard testimony on this bill. We have an amendment to consider.
All right, Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2020 was heard March 31st with a proposed amendment. This is the bill that requires state agencies to report to Ways and Means for each division or unit of the agency a ratio of employees to supervisors. The Dash 2 amendment changes the word possible to the word efficient as the criteria that the Ways and Means Committee is going to use to determine if a state agency should attain a ratio of 11 to 1.
We're going to do discussion first. We're going to do motion from
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments dated March 31st, 2011 to House Bill 2020.
Thank you, Representative Hovey. Chair Hovey moves Dash 2 amendments dated March 31st, 2011 into House Bill 2020. Committee members, discussion? I think this addressed your concern.
Yep.
Representative Connell. Okay, there's no other discussion on the amendment. Is there any opposition to the amendment? Seeing no opposition, we'll move the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2020.
No fiscal on that.
Okay. Again, we have no financial impact, so we're going to have to carry that over. So I'll close the work session on House Bill 2020. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2129. Jen, please, we have a Dash 5 to consider.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2129 was heard by the committee in March, and it modifies a process for local governments to make changes to an acknowledged comprehensive plan or land use regulation, primarily with respect to the notice requirements. The Dash 5 amendment, it allows for a late submission of a proposed change in emergency circumstances, and it requires a local government to provide a summary of alterations to a previously submitted proposed change rather than resubmit it. And it specifies when a plan must be resubmitted, and it modifies the circumstances under which an appeal may be made, and it deletes provisions to allow DLCD to set a fee to cover the cost for review of decisions that are solely to conform a plan or land use regulation to statewide statutes and goals. There is no revenue impact. There's a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendments dated April 12, 2011 to House Bill 2129.
Co-Chair Hovey moves Dash 5 amendments dated April 12, 2011 into House Bill 2129. Committee members, discussions, and we have Bob Rendy from LCDC and Linda Ludwins in the is here too if anyone has questions from these two.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to at least hear from them on these amendments, whether they have come to an agreement on the sticking points.
Please, good morning. Thank you for being here. If you'll identify yourself, and then I guess Chair Hovey has a couple.
Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and these amendments do indeed represent an agreement on some final, I think very minor but important sticking points between the department, some of the other parties that were working, have worked on this bill with us for months, especially the League and the Central Cities Organization. So if you'd like, I'd go into the details of the amendment.
Thank you very much, sir. Linda, you want to confirm?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. Yes, these amendments have worked out our concerns that we previously brought forward to you, and we would support the department's bill here as it sits in the Dash 5 amendments.
Thank you very much. And committee members, this law, this came from some of the cities in my district, and I do appreciate the two working together. There's some other things we'd like to accomplish in the future, but I do appreciate both working together to bring us this Dash 5 that they can agree to. Any other questions of these experts while we have them? Thank you very much. Okay, committee members, we have the Dash 5s. Is there any opposition to the Dash 5s? Seeing none, the Dash 5s are moved into House Bill 2129.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2129 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Chair Hovey moves House Bill 2129 to the floor with a do-pass as amended recommendation. Can we please have a roll call?
Aye.
Representative
Clem.
Aye.
Representative Hovey.
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Shea?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yep.
Chair
Vogel?
Aye.
Aye.
Carrier?
Oh, does anyone want to volunteer? Does anyone want to be? Representative Clem, thank you very much for stepping forward.
Thank you.
I like barbers.
Wow.
Didn't recognize you without your scarf on it.
Okay, I got to close the work session, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to see him without that scarf.
Okay, we'll close a productive work session on House Bill 2129. Committee members, we're going to jump ahead, since we have a representative here, to House
Joint Resolution.
What page? Here we go. Okay. We're going to open a work session on House Joint Resolution 7. Jan, remind us what we have a dash one. Please tell us what.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Joint Resolution 7, the committee on Tuesday adopted the dash one amendment, and the bill now has the revenue is a no revenue impact, and the fiscal statement has been issued, and the committee requested that the referral to Ways and Means be rescinded, and that approval has been made.
Okay, let's, why don't you go ahead and do the motion, and we'll have the representative know.
Mr. Chair, I move H.J.R. 7 with a due pass recommendation to the floor. Due pass as amended, excuse me.
Marshall, one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this one's ready to go. Okay, we got to do the dash one first.
No, it
okay.
Was already adopted.
General Caldwell, will you join us too up here? And
did we amend this bill?
We're going to amend
yes.
it first.
Oh,
we're going to.
Yes.
We did. We already did.
It was adopted. Okay.
Adopted on Tuesday.
Okay, we already amended it.
Okay, committee members, the motion is before us to move this to the floor, but ask Representative Callan one to speak to the dash ones and General Caldwell. If you please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You did pass the dash ones as we talked the last time, which made some clarifications in how the. It clarified basically that calling the legislature into session after a catastrophic event is for the purpose of recovery, certainly not in any way to impact the initial response. And I think we're all pleased with the bill as it sits, anxious to move it on to the Senate where they are anxiously awaiting it.
Thank you, Representative. General? Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Military Department and the Acting Interim Director of the Office of Emergency Management, and I concur with what the good representative said. I think that's a good change, and we're ready to move it along.
Any questions of these experts while they're here, please? Thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
Committee members, I think this is an important piece of legislation, and is any discussions or comments from the committee members before we vote? Seeing none. Mrs. Sullivan, will you call the roll?
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Clinton. Yes.
Representative Congress.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Vice Chair Holding.
Aye.
Vice Chair Lissner.
Aye. Okay. Representative Cowan just left, and I'm sure she'd want to carry the bill.
What?
Oh. Would you like to carry that? Thank you very much. Hey, with that, committee members, we'll close the work session on House Joint Resolution 7. Okay, back on.
Everybody's celebrating, so we're
right now. So we got this one. And we've done 21, 29. So 25, 27. Committee members will open a work session on House Bill 2527. Jan, please give us a description of.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is the measure heard back on February 15th that extends the sunset of the tax credit for affordable housing lenders from the year 2014 to 2020. There are no amendments before you. The revenue statement has been issued, and there is a minimal fiscal impact, but no statement was issued. And the committee will be sending this bill to Joint Committee on Tax Credits by a prior reference.
Chair Hovey, I know you wanted to comment. Would you make the motion first?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2527 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference.
Chair Hovey moves House Bill 2527 to the floor of a due pass recommendation. The bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference. Committee members, discussion. I know that Chair Hovey wanted to make some comments. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't see anybody else jumping in front of me. So, committee members, I did pull this bill off the agenda last time, and wanted to take a closer look at the tax credit, looking at whether there was a possibility for us to save some money, and I actually drafted an amendment and had that reviewed, and my proposed amendment basically took a piece of the criteria for tax credit to when it came to financing construction and development out of the bill to see what kind of impact that might have. And it did return a little bit of savings in 13-15, about $899,000, and then in 15-17, about $1,700,000. But it also had some other negative impacts, that value-based impacts and also other economic ripple effects. And so I was just trying to see, you know, whether we could make this a better bill by saving some money and redirecting that money to a different program to provide housing assistance. But at the end of the day, I decided to drop my efforts on that because it didn't seem like it was panning out very well. And so I am going to be supporting this bill. So I just wanted to explain why this bill came off. I had some questions in my mind I wanted to explore, and did that. And I know Rick Krager and John Van Landingham are in the room, and if they'd like to speak to that, I'd be happy to have them come forward if the committee had any questions about what I just explained.
Well, I think it's a good bill as it is. I appreciate Chair Hovey looking at trying to see if we can find some more efficiencies in this program, and I think we should continue. That should continue to be one of our primary objectives, and I appreciate him doing that. So I think we'll go ahead and take the vote if there's no other discussion. Okay, go ahead, Mrs. Sullivan.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Hunter?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hovey?
Aye.
Co-Chair Britsman?
Aye.
It's going to another committee. No,
that's care. Right. That's right. Okay. The motion carries. Thank you. We'll close the work session on 25-27. I think we did all that right. Did we do all that right?
Mm-hmm.
We haven't messed up yet. Okay. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2636. Jan, we have a -3 was adopted, so we're ready to go with this one.
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2636 has been before the committee three times, most recently on Tuesday when the -3 amendment was adopted. This is the bill that creates the Taxpayer Ombudsman Office in the Department of Revenue, and we were waiting for the fiscal statement at that time. There is no revenue impact, and the fiscal statement has been issued, and there is a referral to the Ways and Means Committee on this bill.
Okay. Thank you, Jen. You want to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2636 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Chair Hovey moves House Bill 2636 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and the bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion, committee members? Seeing none. As we're moving this, we better do a vote. We better roll call. I'm sorry, Mrs. Sullivan.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Clement?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
No.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hovey?
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisdom?
Aye. And the motion carries. And we don't need a carrier on that. We do need a carrier.
No.
Okay, so we're good. Close it. Okay. Close the work session on House Bill 2636. Okay, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2788. Jan, have a -1 was adopted. Can you?
House Bill 2788 was heard on Tuesday. This is the bill that includes the state treasurer in the transparency website, and the committee adopted the -1 amendment Tuesday, which deleted the requirement that the agencies would also report salary and benefit expenses separately on the website. The measure as amended has no revenue impact. There is a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued, and there is no subsequent referral on this measure.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2788 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Hovey moves House Bill 2788 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Committee members, discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Quinn.
I'm hoping this gets us from our B- up a little more.
Good point.
B- is fine.
Yeah, good point. Any other discussion, committee members? Okay, and we have a motion, so we'll have a roll call, please, Mrs. Sullivan.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Quinn.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative
Matthews. Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye.
Co-Chair
Wisdom. Aye. Representative Smith, you want to carry that, or are you on that bill? I don't know.
It'll be fine.
Okay. Representative Smith will be the carrier.
Mr. Chair, I know Kim Thatcher put an incredible amount of work. Maybe we should have a joint carrier on this.
Okay, yeah, would you yield to that, Jefferson?
Aye.
Okay, so.
Joint.
Thank
joint
you.
Carrier. We're done voting.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2788. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2825. We have a -9 on this one.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2825 has been before the committee three times. Most recently, Tuesday, the committee adopted the -9 amendment. This is the measure that requires state agencies to report to DAS on tax expenditures for economic development-related purposes. The bill as amended, there is no revenue impact. There is a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued, and this measure is going to the House Revenue Committee.
We got that taken
there,
off.
There's been approval from the co-speakers to lift the referral, the subsequent referral to House Revenue, so this will be moving straight to the floor.
Thank you very much. Committee member, have a motion, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2825 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Hovey moves House Bill 2825 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Discussion, committee members? Seeing none, Ms. Sullivan, roll call, please.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Webb?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Patrick. Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby?
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisdom?
Aye. Okay, was that another Thatcher Smith?
That'd be a Thatcher Barnhart.
Thatcher Barnhart. So make them the. We'll make them the co-carriers on that one. And that gets us up to a B+.
I object to Representative Barnhart getting to talk more on the floor.
Get a B+. Okay. So motion carries, and with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2825.
It's a three.
This one, what's the deal with this one?
This one's been carried.
Let's give it over. Okay, we'll be carrying that over. We get that. We don't say that now. And we're going to go then to 29. It will open a work session on House Bill 2916. We have a -1, Jan.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2916, it is the bill that directs a lender to offer the borrower a portion, the option to pay the residual debt on a short sale at the same amount or at a discount the lender would offer when assigning the debt to a third party for collection. The -1 amendment is before you. It deletes all provisions relating to residual debt in the printed bill, and it prohibits a lender from bringing action or otherwise seeking payment for the residual debt on a residential short sale if the lender's reported to the IRS that all or some of the residual debt's been canceled under a real estate agreement and that the lender has given the borrower evidence of the report to the IRS. This bill has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact and no subsequent referral.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendment dated March 15, 2011 to House Bill 2916.
Chair Hovey moves -1 amendments dated March 15, 2011 to House Bill 2916. Committee members, discussion? Then no discussion. The -1 is moved into House Bill 2916. Oh.
Chair, I move House Bill 2916 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Hovey moves House Bill 2916 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Discussion, committee members? Seeing none, Mrs. Sullivan, roll call.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Clark?
Aye.
Representative Congress?
Aye.
Representative
Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Smith?
Aye.
Vice
Chair
Hovey?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Wisdom? Aye. Anyone interested in
Matt?
That wasn't a, we didn't have a committee or another legislative member on that. Who's
Representative Harker. Was that Harker's?
No, it was Matt Winger's bill.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have Matt last represented. Thank you for long term. We'll ask Representative Winger if he wants to carry that one. Thank you. Okay, so I got to close. Which one are we on?
2916 close.
Okay, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2916. And we're going to go to.
No, 3291 is ready.
We got it. Okay. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3291. Jim?
Chairs, committee members, House Bill 3291. It requires state agencies audited by Secretary of State to disclose the results of the audit and submit a written report about the changes the agency made or is making in response to the audit to the Legislative Assembly. There are no amendments. Committee heard the bill on March 5th. There's no revenue impact. There is a minimal fiscal impact, but no statement issued, and there's no subsequent referral on this measure.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3291 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Hovey moves House Bill 3291 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, committee members? Seeing no discussion, no comments or discussion. Mr. Sullivan, roll call.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative
Conner? Aye.
Representative
Conner?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hovey?
Aye.
Aye. And we'll ask Representative Harker to carry that bill. Motion carries, and with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3291. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3361. Jan?
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3361 requires the Department of Consumer and Business Services to incorporate clustered mailbox accessibility standards into the structural specialty code, and it requires cities and counties to adopt the standards. There are no amendments to the measure, and the committee heard the measure March 24th. There is no revenue impact, there is a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued, and there is no subsequent referral on this measure.
Thank you, Jen. Chair Hovey.
Mr. Chair, I move we mail House Bill 3361 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Hovey moves House Bill 3361 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, committee members? Seeing none.
Bill should pass.
Seeing none. Ms. Sullivan, could we have roll call?
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Clinton.
Yes.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Vice Chair Holder.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Wisner. Aye. I'll assign Representative Wisner to carry that. Okay, with that, the motion passes, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 3361. Okay, we'll open. We're doing our case so far.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 3015 is being carried over, so...
3415.
No, we're moving that one.
3415?
13. We're on 13.
13. I got ahead of myself.
Yeah, no.
Okay, we'll open a work session on House Bill 3413. -2 has been adopted. Jan, where else are we?
Committee members, the dash two was adopted on Tuesday. This is the measure that requires urban renewal agencies to determine each year whether their maximum indebtedness will be fully paid within the year. There is no revenue impact on the amended bill. There is no fiscal impact, and the measure has a subsequent referral to the House Revenue Committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3413 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. and the bill be referred to revenue by prior reference.
Chair Hobie moves House Bill 3413 to the floor, but do pass as amended recommendation, and the bill be referred to House Revenue by prior reference. Discussion, committee members? Seeing no discussions or no comments, Ms. Sullivan, roll call.
Representative
Cameron? Aye.
Representative
Carter? Aye.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Smith?
Aye.
Chair Hobie?
Aye. Aye. And whose bill was that?
That's going to revenue.
Motion carries. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3413. No, we got the HJM 7.
HJM
7. Okay, we'll open a work session on House Joint Memorial 10.
Committee members, House Joint Memorial 10 urges Congress to enact legislation that assists the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and the National Credit Union Share Insurance Fund in establishing a voluntary system of full insurance for public funds accounts, and it allows states to discard state-specific public fund collateralization. There are no amendments to the memorial. It has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no subsequent referral.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 10 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Hobie moves House Joint Memorial 10 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Committee members, discussion, questions, comments? Good. Can we have a vote, Ms. Sullivan?
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative
Clem.
This one.
Aye.
Representative
Conker? Aye. Representative Matthews?
Aye. Vice Chair
Sheehan?
Aye. Vice Chair
Smith? Aye. Co-Chair
Hobie? Aye. Co-Chair
Wisdom?
Aye. Motion carries. This was Barnhart's, wasn't it?
It was.
You asked Representative Barnhart to be the carrier. With that, we'll close the work session on House Joint Memorial 10. Okay. You did that.
No more bank bailouts.
Okay. Committee members, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2003. This is the first public hearing on House Bill 2003. Jan, could you describe the bill, please?
Mm-hmm. House Bill 2003 requires state agency that owns real property or operates facilities to establish a dedicated account for the purpose of paying the expenses of maintaining and repairing the real property or facilities and replacing portions of facilities damaged beyond repair. Requires state agency to contract annually with a private contractor to conduct a reserve study or a review a study to, in addition to other items, estimate the cost of maintaining, repairing, replacing the real property or facilities, and to set the amount that the agency needs to put into a maintenance account. And it directs the agency to credit sale and lease proceeds and rent revenue to the maintenance account until it's fully funded. It sets timelines to establish the account, to begin funding the account, and to fully fund the account. There are no amendments currently before you.
Thank you very much. And this bill is brought to us by Representative Sheehan. Representative Sheehan, would you identify yourself and discuss your bill with us?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee. I'm Patrick Sheehan, State Representative from House District 51. And this bill actually came as a result of hearing a couple of bills in this committee that didn't make a lot of sense to me, and they had to do with deferred maintenance and how to address deferred maintenance. And deferred maintenance is something that happens when you don't keep up a property, things like roofs and asphalt age with time and need to be replaced. Typically, the state government has just relied on paying for those things outright rather than saving for it. And we require, as a state, we require homeowners associations, condominium complexes, things like that that have shared facilities, whether it's a roof, a deck, or asphalt, or a swimming pool, they have to save incrementally every month, and they have to file reports that show that they know the average life of what's left and that they're saving appropriately for that. So this bill just does that for the state. It just says that the state has to save appropriately and pull money out of their operating expense and put into these accounts every month or every however long they budget for these sort of things, so that when it comes time to replace these things, they have the money to do it. So that's really just in a nutshell what the bill does. There's a couple of defects that have been brought to my attention. Department of Human Services came and talked with me yesterday, and I think it's something that we can fix in the Senate if we decide to move this thing forward. But they do acquire some property through actions against people that owe them money, and this would technically apply to those homes that they foreclose on, and that's not the intent of the bill, and so we'll get something in there to fix that. There is also a concern that as a legislative body, we can sweep funds, and the intent of this is to have funds accrue in this account, and it's not my intent to have the legislature have the ability to sweep those funds at any time. So I'd like to look at the possibility of establishing a trust account, kind of in the same way that Representative Kenemer is looking to do that with the Cultural Trust, to actually put those into an account that can't be raided. So that's my my pitch, and if you have any questions,
thank you for your testimony, and I think the whole committee was interested in trying to find a solution, and we'll see if this is one way we can address this issue that we're not addressing our deferred maintenance. Committee members, questions? Representative Smith?
Yeah, I've got a question. And it's Patrick, the same question I have, or related question I have to Representative Kenemer's bill. I know that many things I have heard, and I understand that we aren't allowed to bind future legislators, right, or future legislative bodies. So if we say, hey, you can't raid it, what's the mechanism by which we say you can't raid it that really means you can't raid it? That's I'm unsure about.
Well, there is none. Okay. That's why I'm saying that a trust account gets us one step closer. Maybe that's a gesture, but the bottom line is the legislature can do whatever they want, and it's important to try to lock up those things as tightly as we can. But I was not able to find a mechanism that made it completely locked up. But you look at places like the Department of State Lands,
yep,
has money that we can access but don't.
But we don't.
And so I'd like this to live in the same sort of space.
Cool. Good question. Representative Matthews.
Thanks. And Representative Sheehan, thanks for bringing the bill forward. I like the concept of what we're trying to do. I'm just curious, is there kind of a soft landing for implementation? I know it's 91 days after date assigned, but also, how does this get us there incrementally so that it's not a big burden on right away general fund, boom?
Thank you for the question. The bill does address that. It has a slow adoption process, and I was hoping that Department of Administrative Services would come in and have some feedback as far as wanting to change that, if they did want to change it. I'd put in some numbers there just to have them as placeholders, and maybe they did look at them and decide that they were fine, but over time, obviously we can't do this thing overnight. It's got to have a ramp up so that it's funded appropriately, and that may happen. I think in the bill it might be 5 or 10 years for total.
Representative, why don't we have Mrs. Robin Kirkpatrick, Mr. Kirkpatrick, excuse me, and Mr. Scott Young. Could you join us at the witness table, please?
Would you like me to go back?
No, I just want you to stand. I'm sorry, Robin. Apologize. Please identify yourself and appreciate you being here, and just if you want to comment briefly on that.
Chairman Wisnant, Chairman Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Robin Kirkpatrick. I'm with the Department of Administrative Services Facilities Division, and we have had a brief opportunity to take a look at HB 2003. We do believe that it is another methodology by which the issue of the deferred maintenance within state facilities can be addressed, and we do believe that there would be a fiscal impact on agencies. The approach that is taken for implementing it over time, as represented in the bill, it appears to be a very good approach. There, if given the opportunity to look at the bill a little bit in more depth, we may be able to make some recommendations for amendment to the bill. We think it's another opportunity, a good step to make progress towards dealing with the deferred maintenance issue. The initial requirement for the reserve study to be completed by January of 2012 would indicate that there would be some fiscal requirements on the part of agencies impacted by the bill due to the requirement for contracting out with a private company to conduct a survey. So we think it's a good opportunity to try to move this problem issue forward, and we'd be happy to have the opportunity to look at it a little more closely and provide some recommendations to Representative Sheehan.
Mr. Young, did you have anything to add? Or
no,
I'm available for questions.
I'm Scott Young with DAS Facilities as well, and we have reviewed it a little bit, like Robin Kirkpatrick said, and we do believe that this is another step forward in helping all of us as state agencies deal with our deferred maintenance issues. And I think that if we had another opportunity to review it, we would offer up some opportunities for improvements to the bill.
Thank you. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have either of you two gentlemen met with Representative Sheehan as he's pushing this concept forward? This has been talked about for quite a while. Have you had an opportunity to talk to him yet?
Chairman Wisnett, Chairman Holvey, members of the committee, Representative Matthews, no, we have not had an opportunity. This bill just came to our attention a day or so ago, and with schedules that we've all been dealing with, we have not had that opportunity. We would very much appreciate the opportunity to do that.
Thank you. Yeah, great. Thank you.
Representative Cameron.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And we've been moving so fast, and you're doing a great job. Can we have a little time to ask some questions? Because this is an important issue. Thank you. Does DAS currently rent properties? Does the state of, do the rentals of properties that, you know, we lease versus own, does that go through DAS?
Any other bills today that we're voting? Mr. Co-Chairs, Representative Cameron, yes, we have all of our properties are rented out to state agencies or boards and commissions, and then we have our leasing program that leases private properties. Does that help you?
Okay, great. Follow-up,
yes,
if I may.
Yes,
Mr. Chair, a couple questions. So whether the state owns a property or a private person owns a property, the leases go through DAS, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Do you have some comparable lease rates that DAS charges versus on state-owned property versus private-owned property for the same square type footage that you could share with the committee?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Cameron, yes, we'd be glad to share what we have as market comparables.
Okay. Off the top of your... I'm just going to keep going because...
Yes, sir. Thank you.
He's working. Off the top of your mind, do those lease rates compare? Are they relatively the same cost?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Cameron, yes. The market's changed drastically over the last couple of years. We were considerably under market rate comparables to... private industry and private market, but we've come more even leveled out with the way the market's changed. Private market rents have come down. Ours has stayed fairly consistent.
Last question.
Yes, sir.
So the private business person, the state's paying a lease to them, and in that lease, the private person is going to maintain an account to take care of the roof, et cetera, et cetera. But on the state side right now, we don't have that going on. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Representative Conger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the gentleman from DAS, actually for Mr. Kirkpatrick specifically, you said there would be a fiscal impact on agencies if the bill was enacted. Could you elaborate a little bit on what you think that would be specifically?
Chair Wisnett, Chair Holvey, Representative Conger, the fiscal impact would result from the requirement for contracting with an outside firm to do the reserve study that's required by the bill, and then subsequently from year to year to do a review of the review study. Typically, private companies that are in the business of providing this kind of assessment evaluation service for facilities depending on the volume of work that they're looking at doing, will charge a cost per square foot for a large property that they're going to assess. And that cost per square foot can range anywhere from 3 to 7 cents a square foot, more perhaps depending on the type of facility that's being evaluated. And so what we would have begun to do is to look at what the volume of square footage of state-owned facilities that this would apply to would be and generate some rough fiscal impacts on a statewide basis, not just for DAS as a whole. And we're not quite at the point where we're ready to finalize those calculations and provide it, but it's basically that kind of a look that we'd be looking at the volume and square footage of state facilities that this would apply to, and then making some rough calculations based on a cost per square foot basis. And we would be happy to conclude those calculations as rapidly as we can and provide the committee with some information.
Thank you. Paula?
Yes, sir. That makes sense, but I think implicit in what you're saying is that there is no the state is not doing any assessment like this currently.
Co-chairs, Representative Conger, each state agency that owns facilities is managing their facilities using their own approaches and methodologies. As we, as DAS has been working at trying to find a recommended solution for this, we have found some are doing assessments internally, some will hire firms externally and bring them in and do this kind of assessment. There is not, from what we've seen, a great deal of work going on. It really is, this issue is pretty much, from what we've observed, for most agencies being handled on an as-needed basis. DAS's recommendation has been to try to implement a consistent process that all agencies would have available to use to carry out this kind of an assessment. Our hope and expectation had been to be able to enable agencies to have a process that they could utilize their own existing staff to support as a means of carrying out the assessment, providing them a consistent methodology. So this would achieve that goal, but through the use of a outside firms, and depending on the number of firms involved, there may be some inconsistency from one analysis to another. But I think there are ways to address that if we look at some potential amendments to the bill that could make that a little more viable and consistent.
Yes, sir. So in your fiscal analysis, I assume that there'll be some kind of offsetting credit, or I don't know whether it's a debit or a credit, but there'll be some kind of offset to the cost of implementing the systemic analysis or system-wide analysis through the means of the bill versus what was already taking place, or what at least should have been taking place, if we were doing a more consistent job of taking care of this problem, or at least getting the information that we need to take care of deferred maintenance problems.
Mr. Co-Chairs and Representative Conger, the answer to that is we believe that this approach, or another approach, that any approach that's used to start diminishing the outstanding deferred maintenance will indeed result in some diminished operating maintenance costs. When our assets are out there in a difficult condition to try to maintain them as viable operating facilities, the costs of operation are significantly higher than if they were adequately maintained. And it's a reduction in that operating cost that we hope to see achieved either through this methodology or another. any approach that starts addressing the deferred maintenance issue and reducing that is going to start having a impact on reducing agencies' typical operating maintenance costs. So, yes, there would be an offset. That would be a difficult number to pin down with any degree of certainty at this point.
Thank you. Other questions, committee members? Chair Hover, Jen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this question is for DAS. So the part about this bill that creates the fiscal of contracting out, requiring you to contract out to do a private reserve study, you know, earlier this session we've had a DAS before our committee talking about deferred maintenance, and we've had two or three other bills about deferred maintenance, and they look like they had a study. And so I guess my question to DAS is do they have the capacity to do their own study without contracting it out?
Chair Holvey, Chair Wisnett, members of the committee, the answer to that is a no. In DAS's proposal, DAS was anticipating contracting with the firm to come in and help DAS implement a process related to DAS facilities. And based on that, DAS would potentially bring in individuals from other agencies, and then DAS would go out and train staff within these other agencies on the assessment process to be used. So the DAS process was one in which a contract would be issued to assist with the initial development of the assessment process, the standards and guidelines. Once that was established, then DAS would carry that out to the other agencies and train staff within those agencies on that process. The agencies then would be able to utilize their existing staff who already are dealing with the maintenance and operation of their facilities to conduct this assessment process. The effect would be essentially the same as getting an assessment done, and hopefully within a relatively reasonable period of time, so that the problem could be identified specifically, and an approach as Representative Sheehan has proposed, or a similar approach could be implemented where there was an incremental process set up for establishing the funding mechanism required.
Thank you.
I think Representative Sheehan wants to say something, so before I ask my next question.
Representative Sheehan. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Co-Chair Holvey, the information that's brought to us and the reports that were brought to us, I think were a little bit different than the one that I'm proposing Department of Administrative Services contract for it. The reports that were brought to us were sort of inventories of things that were so badly damaged that they need repair right away, whereas this is there are agencies that perform these sort of reserve study analysis that is a specialized knowledge where they go through and evaluate the HVAC systems, the age of the wire, all of the last time the concrete was sealed, things like that, and they prepare a useful life on each one of those subjects, and so you can plan accordingly. So it's a little bit different than what's been presented to us before. But this addresses more of the systemic problem of how we got there rather than here's a list of the things that we've got.
Right. And another question. I mean, you sort of addressed the monies for doing this study would come out of the operational expenses of the particular state agencies, I would assume. And so it's going to be difficult, I think, for this bill to move forward, given our budgets with all these agencies, although I think this is a really great idea that we need to pursue about dealing with deferred maintenance. And, you know, I was trying to think of another way, because we did explore some other ways to get money into these accounts, and ultimately this bill calls for, and correct me if I'm wrong, that monies come out of the rent and go into this account of those buildings. And there's been some other proposals about taking money out of new public contract improvement contracts, and you take a percentage of that money to help build the account. And there may be a combination of those things that could help build a larger account.
down the road, but I'm very skeptical whether Ways and Means is going to look at this and decide to start taking money out of state agencies at this point. But I think it's a concept that we need to keep on our table and keep exploring. And one last comment, that if the bill did have a no-sweep clause in it, I would not be able to support the bill. I am very concerned about no-sweep clauses in general, as you may know, because they are generally, essentially, I won't say they're lies, but, you know, when you have a no-sweep clause, you're sort of in telling people that the legislature can't touch this, and that's actually not true. And so I have a little philosophical problem with that. So that's the final question. Comment.
If I may, yeah, in my discussions with legislative counsel, there can be no sweep clause in this. My idea about having the trust accounts is, as I said before, was more of a gesture to show that, yes, this money is being saved for a purpose, and with the hope that future legislators will look at that as something that's being saved for this purpose, and we don't have to jump in and take that for whatever we have. So I think it will preserve the intent of this.
Thank you.
Representative Shan, thank you very much for bringing this forth. I think it's a topic that we need to discuss. I also appreciate DASP bringing this through other bills this session. I don't think it's something we can keep kicking down the road. We've got to stop that. I guess that's the elected officials' present terminology, and I agree. If everyone remember, in the last session, it cost us $350 million to do $178 million worth of deferred maintenance because we didn't set money aside to do deferred maintenance. So I think it is something I'll discuss with the co-chair to see if we can at least keep it alive to see if there's something we could do, change it to a study group or task force or something to look at this. But thank you very much for bringing it forth, Representative, and for your testimony and DAS. Okay, with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2003. Okay, so we're going to open this and take the dash one. Okay, committee members, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2466. Jan, we have a dash one. From Representative Cameron, and then we want Representative Cameron to discuss that, please.
Right. House Bill 2466 is the bill that prohibits sending of unsolicited faxes to a public body that the committee heard April 5th. Mm-hmm. And comments were made about possibly extending that to include the private sector, because right now the bill is written to prohibit sending it unsolicited fax only to a public body. So Representative Cameron has a dash one amendment that does just that, extends it to the private industry. And that includes private individuals, private persons, private business. And there is, the bill is not ready to move out of committee at this time because there would be no fiscal impact on the original, no fiscal impact statement has been prepared on the original bill or on the dash one amendment.
Thank you. Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, you want me to speak to the amendments from here? Obviously, we heard testimony, and Representative Gelser said she was open to amendment that would bring in private businesses. And I just know with the cost of ink and paper these days, and several people, and including myself, have experienced where you go into your fax machine and 5 or 6 or 10 faxes are sent to you unsolicited about all kinds of fun things. And if we're going to do this for public bodies, we ought to help private businesses out there operate under the same law. The amendments, I also got a note or a letter back from legislative counsel that there is some potential, there may be some problems with not only the bill but the amendments Article 8, Article 1, on the free speech. And this, we would want to make sure that we stress that this is not about the content that is being sent. This is more about the distribution of these facsimiles. It's not trying to cut off free speech. It's about the cost and the unwanted effects on the government and the business. So I just wanted to put that on the record about the bill and or the dash ones as well.
Thank you, Representative Cameron. So are you still working with Representative Gelzer as far as to address this, and we want to see if we can get it through the constitutional issue, or get another amendment to address that? Or
no, I'm saying that. Oh, I think we ought to move the dash. I mean, there's my preference: move the dash ones. Put on the record that this is not about. We're not stopping these faxes because of what's in the faxes. It's the inconvenience and the cost. Unwanted, unaccepted by the public sector and the private business.
Thank you. Committee members, any other discussion on this? We do not have the financial impact or anything back, so, but we could do the dash ones if we were prepared, or we'd like to get that. Representative or Chair Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I probably have a question that I suppose we can talk about this offline a little bit. I'm curious, Representative Cameron, if there was legislative council indicated that there might be another tweak to this bill that we could make to more clearly lay that out so that we are better prepared not to run into constitutional issues on this, because I think I agree that, I just think there's a better way to get at this to make it more constitutionally effective. And I'm just wondering if legislative council indicated to you there might be some more work we could do to it to make it a better bill.
I didn't get that. I did not get a
answer on that.
I believe they pointed out that there is a once a year you can call a number and opt out of unsolicited faxes. Well, that works really good. Every year you got to go dial it up, and then I thought, and I didn't have a chance to talk to him. I said, well, then why can't the state do that? All I'm trying to get to is that we're on equal, not evil.
You're correct.
Equal playing field here. What's good for the public sector is also good for the private sector.
Mr. Chair, I agree with that. I think that unsolicited faxes are using resources that of other people. That's why I think there's a way to get at this a little bit clearer so that it isn't a free speech issue. I'd like to follow up with you and perhaps legislative council and see if there's something we can do instead of adopting this amendment and carry this bill over and see if we can get it back on our agenda on Tuesday.
Okay. Representative Clem?
I just want to note for the record, I enjoy receiving unsolicited menus from Cafe Today and their specials.
Representative Clem, you'd have to drive to Portland to pick up those, because we don't have any restaurants in Salem anymore.
Oh, all right.
Representative Sheehan?
I just want to say I'd be in favor of moving the amendment forward. I think Representative Cameron made some great points. It is an expense that the person receiving the fax has to incur that doesn't occur and other sort of things. It's sort of akin to sending a piece of mail to somebody and expecting the recipient to pay the postage. So that's my... And I'm done.
Yay.
Tender jobs.
Chair Hovey, I need a...
Yes, it all comes from overseas.
I'll leave it up to Representative Cameron if he wants to go ahead and move the dash ones.
Paper companies.
Okay. Would you, Representative Cameron, you want to move the dash ones?
Well, Mr. Chair, just reading this letter from Legislative Council, it says the original version of the bill, and
and the Dash 1 amendments have been drafted so that the prohibition is based not on the content of the facsimiles, but on the distribution of the facsimiles. Legislative findings have been added to clarify that the purpose of the bill is to prevent and identify actual effect or harm, that being the waste or misuse of paper and public and private resources, rather than the communication itself. However, please be aware that the broadening of the bill to the extent to all facsimiles sent to every person in Oregon makes the bill more likely to be viewed by the courts as total prohibition and therefore unconstitutional. So with that, I would say what legislative counsel is saying is because we make it this law apply to the state public facilities, it's not going to be as likely to be challenged as if we go to every citizen in Oregon. And with that, I would like to adopt the Dash 1 amendments and let somebody challenge it in court.
Mr. Chair, I move the we adopt the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2466.
Chair Hovey moves Dash 1s and the House Bill 2466. Is there any discussion? Any opposition?
Discussion.
I'm fine with the amendment. I don't plan to vote for the underlying bill, though. But I'm fine with the amendment part.
Other comments, committee members? Okay, I guess we have a roll call then on the
Dash. Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative
Flint? Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Excused.
Co-Chair Hovey?
Aye.
Co-Chair Wizard?
Aye. The Dash 1 is in the House Bill 2466. What's the date of the Dash 1? If I should put down the record.
I couldn't find it.
4/13. That's it. Dash 1's is
the Dash 1 is dated April 13, 2011, into House Bill 2466. With that, we'll close.
Can I ask one question? Mm-hmm. Now that we've amended, I was just trying to sort this out. Does it still make a violation an unlawful trade practice?
I think we can let Representative Cameron maybe do some more research comes to that.
Take it off.
Yeah, because we're not going to move the bill because it don't
happen. Mr. Chair, I think what we overlooked something, that we were in public hearing and we should probably close the public hearing and open a work session to adopt the amendment.
Thank you very much.
Now I object to the amendment. I was just kidding.
Okay, so we have to close the
public hearing.
Okay, committee members, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2466. And it was scheduled for a possible work session, so we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2466. And
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments dated 4/13/2011 to House Bill 2466.
Okay, seeing no opposition, the Dash 1 is accepted into House Bill 2. The amendment of April 13, 2011. 11 is accepted into House Bill 2466. Close the public hearing on 2466. Work session on House Bill 2466.
I think we slowed you down with the public hearing and just messed you up.
We were doing good there for a while, but okay. So we got that one. So we're going to open the public hearing and work session on 311 to take that. We already have that.
Yes, and the money goes to.
And we've already adopted the amendment. Go ahead and adopt the amendment, and we'll carry it over.
Okay. Committee members, will open up. Okay, I'm advised we're going to go to a work session on House Bill 3111. We have a Dash 3 to consider, committee members. Jan?
This House Bill 3111 was heard April 7th. It established the process for veterinarian facilities and boarding kennels to remove a domestic animal if the owner does not take repossession of it. And then the Dash 3 amendment was discussed at that hearing. It deletes the kennels from the proposed removal process, and it deletes provision allowing the animal to be sold. and it modifies the lien law for domestic animals, changing from 15 to 5 the number of days that the animal must be retained or foreclosing the lien. There is no revenue impact, and there is no fiscal impact on the measure.
Thank you. And Chair Hovey, you want to move the motion, and I'll have Mr.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments be adopted to House Bill 3111, and the date on those amendments is April 5th, 2011.
Chair Hovey moves Dash 3s dated April 5th, 2011 into House Bill 3111. Mr. Glenn Kolb is here. Want to come up, please, and explain the Dash 3s or discuss the Dash 3s. Identify yourself. Thank you for being here.
Well, good morning, Chair Wisnett, Chair Holvey. My name is Glenn Kolb, committee members also. I'm a director with the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. And the Dash 3 amendments, as we proposed, would remove boarding kennels from the law. It was not our intent to include them. It really is to address issues relative to veterinary practices, so it shifts the focus to veterinary practices specifically. It also shortens, it would also, for the Dash 3, it would remove the ability to sell the animal for foreclosing on that lien, too. It would give veterinarians the option to place an animal up for adoption, place it into rescue, adopt the animal out, but also, at times, if necessary, to humanely euthanize the animal as well.
Thank you, sir. Would you do us a favor and go through the time we were discussing yesterday? Would you go through the time? I mean, for the different...
Sure. I appreciate it. Chair Wisnett, Chair Holvey, committee members, currently law for domestic animals, once an animal is brought to practice, there is an automatic lien attached to that animal, and it's a 15-day period before you can start to foreclose on that lien. And what we encounter in veterinary medicine is there are some individuals who bring an animal for services, and you never hear from them again. And the challenge is when veterinary practices call them or send a letter to these individuals, we don't get a response. So veterinarians are challenged with how do you provide ongoing care for this animal, but we're not hearing from the owner. There are also some owners who choose not to or refuse to pay for services. And so in the same predicament is, what do you do in the meantime, especially if an animal needs ongoing care?
So that's the current situation.
And that's the current situation. What this would do...
That's 15 days, and then you start the foreclosure.
It is correct. You have to hold the animal for a minimum of 15 days. And what this would do is reduce that time frame.
Mr. Chair, that sounded like two things to me. Either you start the foreclosure in 15 days, and then there's some period after that,
yeah,
or you have to hold the animal 15 days, and then you can kill it. And I'm not sure which we're talking about.
Well, euthanize.
Sorry, we don't kill animals. We just do something else.
You have to hold the animal 15 days minimum before you can send that certified receipt letter that you intend to foreclose on that animal.
Thank you. And how many days would that be, sir?
Well, I mean, you're sending the letter to a person, an individual. You have to wait for a return. It could be up to 1, 2, or 3 days, depending. And then you've got notice of foreclosure, you're given a time for when you're going to foreclose on that lien.
Thank you. Now, in your bill, and our bill is proposing what, sir?
It would reduce it from 15 days, and there's kind of two options. It would reduce current law from 15 days to 5 days. And that is if a veterinarian wants to choose that option, that practice then could start foreclose, and they'd have to give the public notification of providing that information, posting it by a county courthouse, and then if they chose that route, then they'd have the ability to go ahead and seek recovery of unpaid fees in court. Another option, as the bill would provide, would be to give that veterinary practice the ability not to recover fees, but to remedy the issue and address the animal. That'd be taking the animal and adopting it out, and that would be a 4-day period.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Committee members? Representative Smith.
Sure. So the in the amended version, as it would read, would there be any different treatment between an animal that was, you know, relatively healthy, right, you know, that was delivered to the veterinarian, has a deadbeat owner, or owner's phone goes dead, or they leave the country, or something weird happens, but an animal that is being euthanized because it's in pain and because it needs to go down, and maybe the owner is just too heartbroken to say so, right, versus sort of a healthy animal, roughly speaking, animal that could still live, and where it's a different situation. Any different treatment between those two cases?
Chair, wasn't it Chair Holvey, Representative Smith? Until they can foreclose in the lane, in that case they could not, in this case, euthanize the animal. But what veterinary practices typically do is they'll stabilize that animal. And I think they're going to make a judgment call. If in their estimation they believe that animal absolutely needs to be euthanized, they're going to make that judgment. And so I can't say what that's going to be, but it's, I think they base it on their professional assessment of that animal.
Mr. Chair, come forward.
Please.
Anything in, so I think I heard you say or not say, is that there isn't anything in the bill that would offer a guideline or a suggestion or a rule or a hint that different contexts would be treated differently, but I want to make sure I get that right.
That is correct.
Okay. And any other options for where, so I get the problem, right? I get the problem, and I don't want vets to have to be saddled with a bunch of animals, and they become an undesired kennel themselves because people are, being sort of deadbeat owners. I get that. I guess I'm wondering, for that sector of animals, or that sector of vets that were not confident in, just put them down, is there any other option? Isn't there an option of then taking that and giving it to a facility who's, having the next step or the third step or the second or fourth step be going to the pound, right, and having them then go through their practices of trying to give away the animal and then putting it down? Is there somewhere in the amendment that where we contemplate that, or could we contemplate that?
Chair, wasn't it Chair Holvey, Representative Smith? Actually, the DASH 3 amendments does provide that allowance. It would provide the veterinarian the allowance if they chose that one option. This is being added to the bill. The ability to place that animal in a rescue, to adopt out that animal, or in some cases humanely euthanize it. And the reason we talk about having the allowance to humanely euthanize it, there are some cases, instances where that's going to be necessary. I guess we'll look at it, humane shelters, and at the hearing, Sharon Harmon from the Oregon Humane Society was here, and they have a certain day of hold of animals, and at times they have to make the decision whether it's for behavioral issues or that animal is so ill, they have to euthanize that animal. So veterinarians, we believe, we still need that option. Is it used very much? No, we look at it as a last resort, and we encourage our members, especially for healthy animals, to place that animal in a good home, adopt that animal out, give it to a rescue, or give it to a shelter for that very reason. But again, to have humane euthanasia as an option still.
And last question, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
That is a tough one for me. When we talked about it before offline, I wasn't sure that if this bill is going to move or not. The I'm not sure if it's going to be a form of a question. I am still concerned about, feel free to respond, I am still concerned about the case where you have a troubled relationship between the vet and the customer, mm-hmm. right? A mishap with the customer, an animal that is, not like our dog who is cancerous and that was the end of the day whether we wanted it to be or not. Or where there are, I'm not sure if we have the limitations in the bill to make sure that there aren't some unintended, a meaningful number of unintended cases, and you might be able to, and maybe we rely on the professional judgment, and all vets are great, and I actually have huge respect for the profession, but that's my concern.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Thank you,
Chair. Wasn't it Chair Holvey, Representative Smith? I guess how I would comment about that current Oregon law, lien law, if you follow the steps, once that transfer or sale occurs,
still do it.
They can still do it.
Thanks for that clarification, sir. And committee members, we're considering the dash three now. We will be carrying this over to the next work session. So,
have we got the motion on the dash three?
No.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash three amendment dated April 5th, 2011 to House Bill 3111. Are we in a work session?
Yes.
We just opened a work session. We didn't do it public. Okay, we have before us the dash three dated April 5th, 2011. Any opposition to the dash three?
Discussion.
We already had discussion.
Just a little more.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to support the dash three. It makes it better. Still don't plan to support the underlying bill. I would like a preference in there for non-euthanasia shelters first, and if there are none willing, then move to the unfortunate next step. But so anyway, that's my... So, yes on the amendment, no on the bill is what I plan to do.
Could you consult the veterinarian services and see if they're willing to accept that amendment?
Yeah.
Okay, so I see no opposition, so I'm accepting the dash threes into House Bill 3111 and closing a work session on House Bill 3111. Thank you, committee members. We now have, we're going to open a work session on it. Okay. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3195. We have a dash four before us, and Representative Esquivel here to testify on that.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments dated April 13, 2011 to House Bill 3195.
Chair Hovey moves the dash four amendments dated April 13, 2011 to House Bill 3195. Thank you, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6 out of Medford. You have before you the dash four amendments, which are pretty simplistic, but what's interesting about this recordation, electronic recordation bill, it's a pretty simple bill. We had to tie it to, you know, back to the certain sections of the ORS in the laws, but it proves to me if we're at a dash four on a simplistic bill like this, we had two attorneys working on it, and I know them both, and obviously we have four different opinions from two attorneys. But anyway, you'll see that we did change some of the language in and updated some of the language in the existing laws as well. So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
And Mike, you're here to testify on.
Thank you, Co-Chair Wisnett. I'm Mike Eliason with the Association of Oregon Counties. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. All that really needed to happen, Mr. Brickley, when he testified on the original bill, he was absolutely correct when he said the county clerks supported the bill. There was one little portion of the dash one amendment which we hadn't seen, which talked about either the attorney general by rule or the county clerks or individual counties by ordinance could set standards for e-recording. There was some confusion among the counties about who would be setting standards, and there was a fear of individual counties setting different standards. So with Mr. Brickley and another attorney for the title companies, several county clerks, several county attorneys quickly worked together. Everybody was more or less on the same page from the beginning in the dash four amendment after a couple of iterations works for everybody, and everybody's satisfied with it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Committee members, any questions of these expert witnesses?
Expert. Well, I am from home.
Oh, sorry. Thank you very much, both gentlemen.
Thank you.
Representative, thank you. Okay, we have a motion to accept the dash four amendments. Is there any opposition? Seeing none, I accept the dash four amendments dated April 13, 2011 into House Bill 3195. And we'll close the work session on how we don't have the financial impact back, so we cannot move the bill. Close the work session on House Bill 3195.
You might want to just have it easy.
Yeah. Just make a call. Got that big gavel for that. We'll stand at ease a minute, waiting for Representative Nathanson for our last bill, 34. And we'll have, this is a public hearing and possible work session. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 3469.
Yes, committee chairs, committee members, House Bill 3469 is new to the committee. It requires precious metal buyer to keep certain records of purchase or receipt of precious metal. And it requires payment to individual be made only by a non-transferable check mailed to a street address 10 days or more after the transaction. And it establishes a process for the buyer to follow if the individual fails to provide the necessary information. And allows law enforcement to order the buyer to hold or request the Attorney General to hold the metal if it's thought to be stolen property. Makes it a violation of the provisions of the Unlawful Trade Practice Act and declares an emergency effective on passage. There are no amendments before the committee.
Thank you very much. Representative Knightson, welcome. Would you please identify yourself and give us your concise testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from District 13. So the reason you're hearing this bill is a constituent contacted me pretty distraught about a home burglary. Some jewelry was taken in that burglary. Apart from the monetary value, it had great sentimental value. It was family heirloom jewelry. Pretty distraught, realizing that it was probably taken because someone is stealing it and trying to sell it real quickly and get cash for it, probably for drugs. So I talked extensively with law enforcement. I've been talking primarily with Eugene and Portland law enforcement, also called state police, to get an idea about what can we do about this. At first it was thought maybe they're just putting this stuff in those envelopes, you know, but you sell what you have. You see the companies, primarily out-of-state companies. You put it in an envelope, mail it away. It was thought by law enforcement that that is not probably primarily how it's being sold. Some of it might be being sold on Craigslist or eBay, but primarily it's probably going to places in the community or nearby, somewhere up and down I-5 or along the I-84 corridor, just selling it quickly at some sort of a store where there's a buyer to buy it. There are holes in the regulation, and we need to plug those holes. Law enforcement is eager to catch the bad guys, and they're very eager to recover the stolen property and return it to the person to whom it belongs. The objectives of the bill are to reduce property crime associated with the theft of gold and precious metals, to stop the easy access to these methods, and to assist law enforcement in returning the property. The playing field, as it is now, is not level for all businesses who buy these materials. For example, licensed pawnbrokers are subject to regulations, while other businesses that are buying these materials are not subject to regulation. We also recognize that the rule should apply not only to gold, but to other precious metals, such as platinum or silver, where the value is rapidly increasing. We also recognize that there ought to be some exemptions, such as raw ore. We have heard, and I understand you have heard from people who do mining, this bill never was intended to try to stop or dampen people who are involved in mining. That's not what it's about. We've spoken with the bill drafter and law enforcement. We know there's ways to take care of that. So what I want to tell you, first of all, is thank you very much for scheduling a hearing for us. I am working very quickly, as much as I can, with the interested parties, with law enforcement, and with legislative counsel to develop amendments for this bill to make sure that it achieves the purposes that we had. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Mr. Romaine, you want to speak now?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Co-Chair, I'm still in the old days. I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland with the Romaine Group, and I'm here representing the Oregon Pawnbrokers Association. We are very much in support of what Representative Nathanson is trying to do. We have for years, the pawn industry, which is the loan portion, where somebody puts something with us, gets money back, and then comes back and gets it again, is highly regulated. But we work very closely with law enforcement. It's the buy-sell portion of our business and other businesses out there that cause, they're still sort of unregulated out there. What we want is even enforcement, where we work very closely with law enforcement. We have no objection to reporting and to doing a lot of the things that law enforcement needs. We just want to make sure it applies across the board. I mentioned this to the Rules Committee earlier in the week. What Representative Nathanson has been doing is getting people together to talk about something that can go forward. We think she's doing an outstanding job. We like this original bill because we were exempt, but that probably is not fair. So moving forward, working with the police, working with the City of Eugene, the City of Portland, and other agencies, we think we can craft something. It may not be this session. It may be 2012. We're hoping that, frankly, we can get something done and it can be a consensus idea we bring to you in 2012 and you can just pass it quickly. But it is a good thing she's doing and we support it and we're committed to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative, as you know, the clock is ticking, so do you think you can produce something that's going to be agreeable? Or?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think it's going to be really hard. Really, really hard to do that in the time allotted. I'd like just a couple of days and then be able to report back to you whether I think we're going to get something for you.
Thank you very much. Committee members, questions? Representative Matthews.
I appreciate you bringing this forward and I appreciate you being here as well in your industry. I had heard a radio advertisement over the last several months of, with the price of gold now, what it is, jewelers are advertising that bring in your gold and that's trade-in value, and I would imagine that currently they're not reporting that as your industry does, but this bill would hold them accountable for that same and count that trade as a purchase. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, that is correct.
Yeah, I just, you know, my only take on it, and you hit the nail on the head, you know, as law enforcement, they certainly want to do everything they can to deter burglaries. Burglaries now, people think it's all big screen TVs, but it's stuff you can walk and run with, and so it's all this jewelry and these things, you know, might not have a lot of great value on the street, but they are sentimental value to people, and I think anything we can do to deter that, more power to you.
Thank you. Representative Klim?
Just thank you, Mr. Chair. One place to look, you might recall we passed a few statutes around scrap metals and record keeping, and I thought we did a pretty good job there. We've had to refine it, I think, once already, but decent, you know, decent job on that one.
Chair comment, there were some problems with that one, too. But they put a lot of burden on the business industry.
Chair,
Pro-Med.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that you're looking at this bill globally as well. You know, I oftentimes have concerns about they have events that are held at a hotel, for example. They come in from out of state and bring us your gold and really worry about those sorts of events too, and not to mention the ones that advertise on TV that, you know, send us your gold out of state and we'll get you something back. And I know there's been some problems with those, and I'm hoping that that gets put into this bill somehow.
That is a, generally speaking, if somebody's going to steal something and wants to get rid of it quickly, they're usually not going to mail it to somebody. That's our guess. The stuff that comes in, I actually had a question of the police in one of our meetings about whether burglaries went up when those advertisements went out. In other words, we're coming into town, steal now, you can get rid of it tomorrow. But according to the police statistics, that really is not the case. However, what Representative Nathanson is doing is getting everybody together to look at the right way to do this, and yes, you will be regulating those, let's come in and just camp out for 2 days at a hotel and get everybody to come in. You'll be looking at all of that so it's fair across the board. It doesn't punish in-state people simply for being here.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you for that, and I realize that burglars aren't going to mail their stolen items in, but my reference was to the people that are actually advertising getting it mailed to them are actually the ones that are stealing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's two sides to that equation.
Good luck to you, Representative. Go with speed. Go with speed.
Thank you
very
Mr.
much.
Chair.
We have two witnesses testify on this bill. I'll bring them up separate. Mrs. Wilson, Brenda Wilson. Identify yourself, please, and welcome to the council.
Chair, wasn't it? Chair Holvey and members of the committee, my name is Brenda Wilson, and I'm the Intergovernmental Relations Manager for the City of Eugene, and I'll be very brief. I just wanted to get on the record that the City of Eugene supports Representative Nathanson's efforts. Right now, we have two property crime detectives working on the concept with her. We did have some concerns with the original drafting of the bill. And we believe that those amendments will address those concerns. Four main concerns that we want to address is that, first of all, we agree, the City of Eugene agrees with Mr. Romain, that it needs to be, the process needs to be fair and consistent across the board. We also believe that the transactions that are captured also need to be consistent and uniform across the board. Otherwise, it doesn't help law enforcement. We do not want unintended consequences to come out of this bill. What we are trying to address is the theft of gold and other precious metals. As written right now, we're concerned that, as Representative Nathanson stated, that it covers activities that were never meant to be covered, like mining. And we also believe that it could capture things such as the buying and selling of used textbooks in Eugene, the University of Oregon. That would be a huge concern. And the buying and selling of things like used clothing. We don't want to capture that, so we want to make sure it's narrowly tailored. And most importantly, it needs to work. It needs to work for businesses, it needs to work for the buyers and the sellers, and it needs to work for law enforcement. And so we're working with Representative Nathanson, and we just wanted to make sure that you knew that. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Wilson. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you for traveling here and your support. Finally, Mr. Tom Quintal. Good morning. Please identify yourself and give us your concise testimony. Thank you.
My name is Tom Quintal, small-scale miner.
I live in Salem, Oregon, and Chair Whitsitt and co-chair is a member of the committee. I just maybe have a couple questions about the bill. Got a, not quite an ounce of fine gold and some nice nuggets. And I'm pretty diligent about taking digital photos of all the stuff I have for insurance purposes. In the event that, say I were robbed and I turn in a police report, I'm trying to figure out when somebody pours half of this out and then takes the other half and sells it, and I get a call to come down and identify my merchandise. There's no serial number on this stuff. They take a nugget and they smash it with a hammer. There's no way to identify what it is at that point, as far as my digital photo that I think is in the bill. So I'm trying to figure out, how are we going to identify our stolen property? As I understand, if it isn't identified or recovered within, say, 90 days, the Attorney General ends up with it, and I don't know where it goes from there. I'm just trying to figure out, what are they, how are they addressing the identification of items that really don't have any identification on them? That would probably hold true also for a coin. Anything pre-64 has, I guess, approximately 90% silver in it. And if somebody wants to acid wash it or stomp, or, you know, with a hammer on it, and they turn it in for silver, and I've taken a picture of it, how am I going to identify it? You see what I'm saying? I'm trying to figure out how we identify this property that they, I mean, it sounds really good from the standpoint of trying to protect the people that are burglarized, but I see a lot of issues where there's just no way that you're going to be able to identify your stolen goods. So where does it go from there? You follow me?
Thank you.
So that's one thing. And the other thing I'm thinking kind of sounds like a little big brother to me, and wanting to know if I buy or sell my gold or silver, whatever I have, sounds like a tracking system for precious metals. Bothers me a little bit there, too. Who owns the gold? Who owns the silver, platinum, whatever? So I don't know. That's the only things I wanted to.
Well, I appreciate you
up.
Appreciate you bringing those forth. Is there an association or an organization of the miners or the of people that are doing what you're doing?
Yeah, we have 8 associations that are real active in Oregon, about 5,000 members, and I end up usually, because I live in Salem, bringing this type of thing to your attention.
Well, I think that that you're representing the organization would be the best way to be sure that everyone's input, and I think this committee and all of our legislators want to be sure that we don't pass this. I think this is, we need some policy here, and we don't want to pass legislation that has unforeseen consequences. So your input in that would be very valuable, and I'm sure that Representative Nathanson would consider that.
Very good.
Any other questions, committee members? For Mr. Quintal? How's business?
Well, it's been pretty good.
Good.
And the gold and silver keeps going up, it's even better. We haven't actually started our season yet. Probably won't until about June or July. High water and pretty cold water, too. So,
are there any records of how much you're mining now, you know, from getting from Oregon? Because we didn't, was this a boom that we didn't know about?
Actually, what we figure, there's approximately $10 million brought into the coffers in the state of Oregon, not just from the metal itself, but hotels, motels, yeah, gas, fuel, you know, equipment, tourism. All of that.
Good.
Do you, you know Richard Morgenstern?
Yes, I sure do.
Give him my best.
I sure do.
Tell him I miss him, have him come by.
Yes.
You probably need to have this part of the Travel Oregon now come and gold mine for pay for your trip. So.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, committee members, we've got to go slow here.
Thanks.
We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3469. Okay, we're going to just take a... We don't need to recess just a minute. We want to be sure that any bill, we got to list all of our bills or they fall, they're dead. So we got to be sure we're carrying over with that.
substantive use.
Don't try to explain the rules.
Okay.
Look, you don't want to go there.
Chair Hovey and I agree.
I went
to carry over
for lunch.
House Bill 2020, House Bill 2859, House Bill 3241, House Bill 3415, House Bill 2003, House Bill 2466, House Bill 3111, House Bill 3195, House Bill 3461, House Bill 3469.
My bills.
You got it.
Where's the discipline? The 3 points.
Those will be carried over to our next scheduled meeting.
Was the DAS bill in there?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. With the list of carryovers to our next meeting, and committee members, thank you for your work, and we'll adjourn.
Nice job, Mr. Chair.